lot of the first round of doses have been bought up by the U.S. and by Canada and by the U.K. and other wealthier countries.
There are some major questions about worldwide distribution of a coronavirus vaccine. It's Thursday, December 17th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Also coming your way, the U.S. nears the okay for a second coronavirus vaccine. The COVID pandemic has driven many in the U.S. to food lines. Although some Republican lawmakers seem to accept Joe Biden as the next U.S. president, the current president apparently does not. That and more on today's VOA Asia. While the first shots against COVID-19 are rolling out in the United States, Britain, and Canada, nearly a quarter of the world's population likely will not have access to a vaccine. VOA's Steve Barragona has been looking into this. He joins us now. Steve, how did this situation come about?
We've got the first vaccines are rolling out from Pfizer. We're expecting to see another one from Moderna by the end of this week. And those vaccines are likely to show up in wealthy countries, and they're likely to not make their way into low and middle income countries anytime soon. Some of the lower, I should say that some of the middle income countries, upper middle income countries especially, have managed to get to sign deals with Pfizer to get some of this vaccine, although it's not entirely clear when they'll get it, because a lot of the first round of doses have been bought up by the U.S. and by Canada and by the U.K. and other wealthier countries. So it's not really not clear what kind of supply of vaccine they're going to have access to and when.
Well, this is an Asia-centric program, and have you identified any Asian countries in that middle ground?
Well, we have seen Singapore has made a deal with Moderna and Pfizer to get a hold of some of the vaccines from that are just starting to roll out. We've seen Indonesia has made a deal for one of the other vaccines. That's one of the front runners, the AstraZeneca vaccine. We've seen some indication that Malaysia is going to get some vaccine, but there's really, besides that, there's not a lot out there. And I think most of what we're looking at, it's going to be a while. These folks are there's a mechanism that the World Health Organization has set up called COVAX. It's like the Coronavirus Vaccine Access Facility. I think that's what they're making the acronym stand for. And this was an effort to try to get more equitable distribution. So it's not just the rich countries that get the vaccine. But they don't have a lot of vaccine in hand at the moment. They've signed their biggest deals with AstraZeneca. And the idea with this facility is that it will be able to provide vaccines, especially to low and middle income countries that couldn't necessarily pay for them themselves. This is not terribly well subscribed at the moment. Certainly the Pfizer and the Moderna vaccines are not part of this. The AstraZeneca vaccine, they've bought about 300 million doses, which is great, but they've promised that they will deliver 2 billion by the end of next year. And it's not clear where this is going to come from right now. And so these countries have bought up about 7.5 billion doses cumulatively of all of these vaccines. And interestingly, the capacity for manufacturing all these vaccines, we're not going to have enough to vaccinate everybody in the world, even if all of these vaccines work. Which we don't know that they will at this point. I mean, we just heard late last week the vaccine from Sanofi and GSK does not work terribly well in the elderly. So they're going back to phase two. They're taking a step back. They're going to reformulate and try again. In a best case scenario, the manufacturers themselves say they have enough capacity to immunize a total of 6 billion people. That's all the vaccines out there. All of their manufacturing capacity pooled together. That's assuming that all of those vaccines work, that they, all the companies get the financing on time to scale up manufacturing. That assumes that nothing goes wrong with the manufacturing itself, and that nothing bad happens in the rollout. So what this means is that there's roughly 1.6 billion people that just it's just physically impossible that they will get a vaccine this year. There just isn't capacity. Or next year, I guess, 2021. So it's going to be 2022 before at least some folks get a vaccine.
VOA Steve Barragona, thanks, Steve. We invite you to read more on our top stories by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the voanews.com website. You're listening to VOA Asia. The United States is on the cusp of getting a second coronavirus vaccine. Regulators with the Food and Drug Administration announced Tuesday that its preliminary analysis of a vaccine developed by Moderna and the National Institutes of Health confirmed its safety and effectiveness. The report did not reveal that four volunteers in the late-stage clinical trial developed Bell's palsy, a condition that involves temporary paralysis or weakness in a person's facial muscles. Three of those participants had received the vaccine. The other was given a placebo. The hunger relief organization Feeding America says more people now are seeking help at food banks nationwide. More with VOA's Mariama Diallo.
Phyllis Marder quit her job as an Uber driver shortly after the coronavirus pandemic hit. Now she's struggling and says she's no longer embarrassed to go to food pantries to help her get by.
And then I decided that that was just like keeping a secret makes things get worse. So, and makes me feel worse about myself. And so I decided that it was more important to talk about it, like, you know, I have to pay my electric bill and I have to go to the food pantry.
There are many Americans like her. Feeding America, one of the largest anti-hunger organizations in the U.S., says the number of people seeking food assistance has increased an average of 60% since the pandemic began. Food banks and nonprofit groups are helping many survive. Brianna Dominguez, a mother of two, says she began going to pantries more often after her boyfriend lost his job. Her job will come to an end in about 2 weeks, and Dominguez hopes this Illinois food bank called Hillside Pantry will help them survive.
I'm pretty sure if I didn't have my job, I don't know what I would do. I don't know what I would do if I didn't have Hillside. It would be very hard.
New Orleans resident Norman Butler is unemployed and says he and family would go hungry without this food aid.
If it wasn't for the people being able to have you to come out to get some food to put on the table, we'd be worse off. No doubt, we would starve.
Butler says he isn't fortunate enough to be able to telework like so many Americans during the pandemic.
Because everybody can't work from home, and everybody doesn't have careers where they can just operate on a computer and still have their income coming in. Somebody like me that's a limousine driver, shuttle bus driver, a bus boy.
And as he puts a block of cheese in his refrigerator.
This is what you call a blessing.
Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
We're happy you are with us on VOA Asia. We turn our attention now to U.S. politics. After weeks of silence, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell Tuesday congratulated President-elect Joe Biden and Vice President-elect Kamala Harris following Monday's formal vote by the Electoral College that cemented Biden's victory in the November 3rd election. Yet there is still no sign President Donald Trump is willing to accept defeat. White House correspondent Patsy Wittikaswara reports.
Still no sign of concession from the White House as Press Secretary Kayleigh McEnany spoke to reporters Tuesday.
The president is still involved in ongoing litigation related to the election.
But earlier Tuesday, Republican Senator Mitch McConnell, the majority leader, broke his long silence and congratulated President-elect Joe Biden and Vice President-elect Kamala Harris on their victory.
Our system of government has processes to determine who will be sworn in on January the 20th. The Electoral College has spoken.
On Monday, members of the Electoral College formally cemented Biden's victory with 306 electoral votes. Still, Trump continues to deny he lost,
because this election was a fraud,
earning a sharp rebuke from Biden, who on Monday night accused Trump of an unprecedented assault on democracy.
It's a position so extreme, we've never seen it before. A position that refused to respect the will of the people, refused to respect the rule of law, and refused to honor our Constitution.
Trump continues to promote baseless claims of voter fraud, claims that his supporters believe. They rallied in the nation's capital over the weekend.
This is not a banana republic. We need to fix the election.
A group of Republican House members say they will use Congress's tallying of the election results on January 6th to declare Trump the winner, a largely symbolic move. William Howell is a professor of American politics at the University of Chicago Harris School of Public Policy.
It's less of a last-ditch attempt to actually turn the election around as it is just another opportunity for another performance wherein members of the Republican Party can demonstrate their, you know, fidelity to and commitment to Trump and Trumpism.
Trump and his allies have filed 60 lawsuits. All have failed to provide evidence of widespread fraud. William Howell is a professor of American politics at the University of Chicago Harris School of Public Policy.
Every single state official responsible for elections, as far as even Attorney General William Barr, a close Trump ally, is concerned, there simply is no fraud.
Attorney General Barr, who has fallen out of favor with Trump after acknowledging the Justice Department he led found no widespread voter fraud, announced his resignation on Monday. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News.
Thanks for being with us on VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Australia will ask the World Trade Organization to intervene in its dispute with China over barley and expects other nations to become involved in the case. That's what Australian Trade Minister Simon Birmingham said Wednesday. China effectively ended imports of Australian barley in May by putting tariffs of more than 80% on the crop, accusing Australia of breaching WTO rules by subsidizing barley production and selling the grain in China at below production cost. Birmingham said Australia would formally ask the WTO to intervene on Wednesday.
We have been a long-standing defender of the international rules-based system, of the importance of multilateral cooperation and engagement. And in doing so, it's appropriate that when we argue for there to be international rules and an independent international umpire to resolve disputes, that when we find ourselves in the case of having such disputes, we call in the umpire and we ask the independent umpire to adjudicate and ultimately to help to settle those disputes.
China is the Australian barley growers' largest market. The grain is among a growing number of commodities that China has targeted as bilateral relations plumb new depths. Australia is seeking clarification of recent Chinese state media reports that Australian coal imports have been banned. Birmingham said China had accumulated a series of decisions that look like sanctions against Australia. This is VOA Asia. Tokyo District Court Tuesday sentenced a man to death for the 2017 murders of 9 people, according to local media, ending a case that grabbed headlines in Japan with the culprit dubbed the Twitter Killer for contacting victims via the social media platform. Ryan Brooks reports.
30-year-old Takahiro Shiri Ishii was found guilty of murdering, dismembering, and storing the bodies of the victims in his apartment outside Tokyo. According to the GG News Agency, the prosecution said Shira Ishii first contacted the 9 on Twitter after they expressed suicidal thoughts. The agency also says he used a handle that loosely translates to hangman, and that Shira Ishii invited the victims to his home, promising to help them die. Kyoto News reported that his defense lawyers argued he killed the victims with their approval. The judge ruled the victims did not consent to being killed, and that Shira Ishii was mentally fit to be held responsible for their murders.
That was Ryan Brooks reporting. You have been listening to VOA Asia. Like us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia. And you can find us on Instagram and YouTube and at voanews.com. Thanks for joining us. Thanks to our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team of Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, and Doug Bernard. I'm Ira Melman. Enjoy the day ahead.